This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hey. But if y'all waiting on me to apologize, hell gonna freeze.
Wait.
What's going on, everybody? It's another edition of the Points in the Paint podcast. Exactly one more week of the regular season. Ben Wittenstein.
Zach Badger House, of course, is in the house.
We're both with you here. We appreciate everyone subscribing and leaving comments and following us on social media throughout the entire regular season of the NBA. We didn't even know if this season was going to happen, how it was going to happen, and it ended up being great. We're coming up on the playoffs, so we do appreciate everyone sticking with us. We're going to have a lot of fun for the NBA playoffs. We're going to have some fun guests on. We're going to get some fun betting guests on to make sure you win some money over the playoffs. And we're going to try to do some Instagram Lives, possibly, Zach.
Yeah, definitely going to try to do that Instagram Live. Looking forward to that. Going to have some guests for the playoffs, for the postseason cooking up. Definitely looking forward to that. Going to dive in this play-in scenario one more time before it officially begins. It's definitely becoming exciting. And it's definitely getting kind of a little dicey, too.
It is.
Depending on which team you're rooting for.
Oh, 100%.
So I'm looking forward to it next week.
Yeah, Sunday is going to be so much fun. You're going to have, I think, every team in the league playing on Sunday in the afternoon. If there was ever a time for an NBA Red Zone channel, that would be the one day of the year that would be amazing to have a Red Zone channel for the NBA.
Basketball go too fast.
Yes. Yeah, we'd have to have like six screens on at once. All right, but we have a lot to talk about, Zach. We're going to look back at our preseason predictions to see where exactly we went wrong on those, and that's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about Russ breaking some records, an interesting thing being said by Scott Brooks from about Russell Westbrook that we're going to overreact about. But let's start with our story of the week.
Our top story tonight.
And that story of the week, it got a little bit more interesting a couple days ago because we were figuring our story of the week was again going to be the Lakers and again going to be talking about how unique the end of the season has been for them. And they had been losing games and LeBron had been complaining about the playing game. And then they go out on Sunday and they beat the Suns by 13. They beat the Suns by double digits without LeBron James. And Anthony Davis goes off for, 42 points. So, I mean, what's going on with the Lakers right now? They were terrible against Portland, and then Anthony Davis helped them bounce back. What is going on here?
Listen, the LA Lakers, it's been so bad. Even despite the win against the Phoenix Suns, which was a good game, and I think it sent a message to the rest of the league, for Anthony Davis at least, and gave him that extra confidence boost that he definitely needed as we get closer into this play-in scenario. Now, this is what I'm going to say. Anthony Davis was so upset in the Portland game because he probably felt like they shouldn't have lost. Him scoring like 8 straight points to get them back within a 2-possession game, and then Kyle Kuzma goes out and chucks a 3 that's not even necessary. Could have drove to the rim, could have got a layup, but the supporting cast of the Lakers blew that game, so they kind of had to bounce back, win against Phoenix. Now their next opponent is going to be the Knicks, who I believe is going to be the Knicks championship game, if you ask me, against the LA Lakers with LeBron James returning. You see, he's returning this next upcoming game for the Lakers. So I'm looking forward to see what he's going to do in his return because that ankle's been kind of bummed out.
Yeah, I know there were conflicting reports about him coming back for the Knicks. And if he comes back for the Rockets as well on Wednesday, either way, the Lakers need to have him play in some of these games before the playoffs. He needs you know, he's obviously he's getting older. He needs to be able to get back into game shape, get ready for the playoffs, because as good as LeBron is and as high of a regard as we hold him, he needs to be able to play a little bit more in the regular season instead of just getting thrown into the playoffs.
Yeah, he can't be thrown out there to the wolves in this situation. And so this is what I'm going to ask you, right? Let me paint this picture for you. Paint this picture Picasso style. I'm going to do it just for you, Ben.
I'm ready.
Take this for example, right? LA Lakers are currently seventh, correct? If I'm not mistaken. They're currently seventh in the standings. So if the LA Lakers were to somehow lose to the Warriors and the Warriors secure the seventh spot, and then the eighth spot, the Lakers somehow secure that spot, right? You still with me? They secure the eighth spot and be whoever's fighting between the ninth and the tenth spot to get to the eighth, that opportunity to get the eighth position. So they'd be whoever that is, Memphis, whoever. And they play the Utah Jazz in the first round. Los Angeles Lakers, number eight seed. Utah Jazz, number one seed. And they defeat Utah Jazz. I think that's going to be a good role for a Western Conference Finals, NBA Finals appearance for the LA Lakers if they can somehow secure the eighth spot and beat up on a Utah Jazz. Because I think they have too much superstar talent available and they can beat the Utah Jazz.
Yeah, that one spot in the Western Conference right now is really interesting because you have the Jazz and the Suns going neck and neck. Right now, the Suns are a game and a half behind. If the Jazz win the rest of their four games, they're going to get that top spot, obviously. But they need to win at least three of their next four to have a chance to remain at the top. But I think if you're those teams, you need to be watching what the Lakers are doing. Because at this point in the playoffs, and theoretically, right, if the Lakers and the Warriors match up in that 7-8 matchup for the play-in game and the Lakers lose, then what they would do is they would play the winner of that 10-9 matchup.
Yep.
And so even if they win that, then they would still remain the eighth seed. So if the Lakers still get that eighth spot and they play the Jazz, that is a very difficult first-round matchup for either the Jazz or the Suns.
It's so sad. I actually would prefer it be the Utah Jazz just because of Rudy Gobert and, you know, him being considered the best defensive player in the game, and I don't agree with that right now. And Donovan Mitchell not being healthy, I think that's going to be very important, him not being fully healthy going into the postseason. They're going to need him because I don't think the three-point shot is going to be able to save them in the likes of a L.A. team with Anthony Davis and LeBron James. I think if they run into them, I don't think they could beat them four times. Now, they may go six because of home court advantage being in favor of the Utah Jazz, but I think ultimately they could steal one or two games from them being the LA Lakers.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how the Lakers approach this type of scenario, because they expected to be that one seed or the two seed at the very least in this point in the season. But with LeBron injured and with Anthony Davis being injured, they're stuck in that top seven or that eight seed. And they're going to be a tough, if they're fully healthy, they are obviously a top five seed in the West, stuck in that eighth seeded spot. So you're going to get a very fun matchup between possibly the Jazz and the Lakers. And now it's going to be even more difficult for the Suns to play the Lakers. And we just saw that. We saw the Lakers beat the Suns without LeBron. Now that's not the end all be all, but that is there. And that is a blueprint for the Lakers to do something. Anthony Davis is not going to score 42 points every game against the Suns, but if he has the help of LeBron James, it's possible that you can see the Lakers as an eighth seed win that first round matchup against the seed.
I agree. Yeah. So like what sucks in the play with this play-in scenario is what we're about to get into. And that's like the injury aspect late in the season and how it's affecting certain teams. Now it's not affecting a team like the Utah Jazz being the number one seed with a Donovan Mitchell being out, or a Denver Nugget team with a Jamal Murray with him being out. But Bradley Beal, they're on a teetering fence right now with Washington Wizards of being in the play-in scenario, currently the eighth spot. And he's out day-to-day with a hamstring injury. So what you think is going to take place with the Wizards?
It's an interesting scenario because right now they are that 10th spot. And the team behind them is the Chicago Bulls. And I don't think the Bulls have it in them to make a push for that final 10th spot, because right now they're 2.5 games out. They've got a fairly favorable schedule, but they need to do something that is very rare from them from this season, where they need to win four in a row. And I just don't know if that's possible from the Bulls. Now the Wizards also, they need to start winning games. And if they don't, the Bulls are going to be able to overtake them. But to overtake a 2.5 game margin in four games is incredibly difficult. Mm-hmm. So as of right now, I think the Wizards are in a fine position. I think they're going to be able to make that play-in game for the playoffs. Okay. And a Wizards-Pacers play-in game, if everyone is healthy for both teams, that's going to be a lot of fun. I think that is going to be one of the more fun matchups that we see for the play-in game. But I think the Wizards are okay right now, and they can afford a game or two without Bradley Beal. And if they want to sit Beal to make sure that he's healthy, I don't think that's not the worst decision that they can make.
Okay, but I think he's eager to play. We'll see what happens because, you know, he's chasing that scoring title this season.
He is,
with Steph Curry, and, you know, we'll get into that.
Yeah, they've been going back and forth. So I would assume it doesn't seem like it's the worst injury for Beal, so he'll probably try to play if he can. But that scenario for that 10th spot is a lot more intense right now than the Western Conference, where you have the Spurs and they have a 3.5 game lead over the Pelicans, something like that. And the Pelicans are missing Zion, and it looks like they're pretty done. They're going to be playing for that lottery spot. So I think that 10th spot with the Wizards and the Bulls will be a little bit more interesting. Now, the Bulls are in a weird position, too, right, where they are kind of towing the line of, do we want to just continue losing so we can get that top four pick and have a chance at a top four pick because they traded their first round pick for Vucevic, but it was top four protected. So they're in that weird spot where they made a move for Vucevic to try to make the playoffs this year. But now when they're in a position where they could still lose the rest of their games and have a higher percentage shot of getting that top four pick. So they are in a very weird position where it's almost a win-win. If you get in the playoffs, you get the playoffs. You did what you were trying to do. You get that 10th spot. But if you lose, you might get a good pick. So they're in a weird spot. I'm not really sure what they want to do at this point. I don't even think they know what they want to do at this point. So the Wizards, I think, are pretty secure in that 10th spot. Do we want to look at our preseason predictions? Is that something we really want to do to ourselves?
Yeah, because, listen, sometimes you're right and sometimes you're wrong. And sometimes even when you're right, or even if you're wrong, you were still right.
So, that's true.
You know, in certain ways, we were kind of right in some of these, but then some of them we may have been far, far left.
Rookie of the Year. This was our picks for Rookie of the Year. And you can go back and listen to our episodes for preseason predictions, and you can cross-check it with us. But our Rookie of the Year, I think you said Obi Toppin, and I said Patrick Williams. I think that's the order. We were both very wrong on that regard.
Completely off. Completely off. You know, the top three picks in the draft were before Wiseman went down. You know, obviously LaMelo and Anthony Edwards, they're currently the ones fighting for that Rookie of the Year candidacy position right now for that award. And if I had to give it to one of them, it's so tough. LaMelo missed some time, but they're kind of in the play-in scenario. The Timberwolves are bad, but Anthony Edwards plays very well. He's been playing really good as of late, getting this 20 points, 25 points, and then making highlights. Did you see the highlight where he dunked the ball, got a steal, got a layup, so 4 points in like 2 seconds? Mm-hmm. But like seeing that type of energy from a rookie already being only 19, both those guys are 19, 20 years of age. So they have so much more room to grow. LaMelo's passing is uncharted. Like, it's ridiculous the type of passes that we see from LaMelo as a rookie, the court vision, the full court, three court, quarter passes. It's amazing. So, we were wrong about the Rookie of the Year for sure, picking Obi and Pat. I respect why you picked Pat, though. You know, since Chicago Bulls fan, I can respect that.
You got to do that. But Anthony Edwards and LaMelo Ball, they're fun. And that's the thing, too, is they're both really fun to watch. And I think that's something to get excited about. They're only 19. Yeah. They've got, you know, 10, 15 years left of being really good and really fun players, and they only have time to improve. So if it's going to be someone, it's got to be two exciting people, and I think it'll go to either Anthony or LaMelo, probably LaMelo, but you could make the case for Anthony Edwards as well. Sixth man, we both said Carmelo.
I was rooting for my baby. They didn't put him on the bench. I was hoping he was going to get it.
Yeah. We both said Carmelo, and it's looking like it's probably going to be Jordan Clarkson. It could also be Joe Ingles, but he has started a good amount of games this season just because of injuries. But, I mean, right now Jordan Clarkson is the leader for that six-man spot for sure.
That's funny because they're on the same team.
Yeah, it's wild. It's weird that they have, like, two six-men in that scenario. But people were talking about Joe Ingles. I think he started, you know, like 40-something games. And
that's way too many.
it's a little too many to consider him for sixth man, but he is, you know, in theory, the sixth man has been the sixth man for the Utah Jazz, but it's probably going to be Jordan Clarkson. It would have been great if it was Carmelo. And it made sense to pick Carmelo at the time. And honestly, you know, Zach, I'd do it again. I'd pick Carmelo to be sixth man. It just makes so much sense.
Hey, but look, milestone, top 10 all time in scoring this season. Probably going to end up cracking at least top 8, probably past Shaquille O'Neal and be a top 7, top 8 all time scorer in this league. Didn't win sixth man, but we were still in this league. They tried to keep us out, Melo, but we're right back top 10, and I'm all here for it.
It is impressive what he's been doing at his age, to be honest. He's still performing like that. Now, Zach, we have to talk about our most improved player pick. Because if we're talking about still standing behind Carmelo Anthony, I would 10 times stand behind our pick
for most improved
player. And that is, as we go to the Mile High City, we both picked Michael Porter Jr., the Denver Nuggets, to be this year's most improved player. Now, if we were to take his statistics from just since Jamal Murray has been injured and elongate for the rest of the season, I think we would have a good shot of being correct that he would be most improved player. He's averaging 25 points a game, shooting 50% from three, 60% from 2-point land. Like, he has been playing incredibly well with the increased responsibility with Jamal Murray being hurt.
Yes.
But unfortunately, the season is longer than the last two and a half. And he has not performed like a Julius Randle has performed, or he has not performed like even like a Christian Wood has performed and how well he's been playing. Jeremy Grant in Detroit and how well he has been playing. I think there is a good list of guys behind Michael Porter Jr. at this point that are going to win the award.
Yeah. Big shout out to Julius Randle. I think it's pretty clear cut unanimously that Julius Randle, no one else should get a vote, first place vote for most improved player of the year. No one else should. Jeremy Grant, you know, Detroit Pistons, they're terrible. Just in words, we talked about the Houston Rockets for weeks, and they were on like a 15-game losing streak. So, and I think it was more than that. I think it reached 20 games. So, no. Now, however, Jew Randle, the New York Knickerbockers, the New York Knicks, fourth seed in the playoffs in the East. And this is the podcast where we reluctantly over and over again with the Knicks. They were terrible. We don't know what they're going to be. Tom Thibodeau's running players to the ground. That's his resume. And now he has the New York Knicks, a gritty team, hard-fought team, fighting night in, night out. Beat a solid Clippers team and a great performance from Derrick Rose, too, leading the team. Jrue Randle's most improved, man. 24-10-6. Got to get most improved.
Yeah, 100% agree. And as much as we wanted Michael Porter Jr. to be that way, he's looking like he is like he could still win it next season, depending on if this improvement without Jamal Murray, if his usage stays up from where it is now into next season, he could have a legitimate shot again at most improved player. And it could be the time where he turns the corner. Now he needs to continue to have that increased usage and the increased responsibility in the offense. But it's there.
Yeah.
The foundation is there. So I don't want to say we were completely wrong about it.
We weren't.
And maybe he wasn't getting the responsibility that we thought he would be able to get.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to say we were half right. Let's give us a half point here on being right. We were wrong about the last. We'll be half right about most improved players.
Kind of half right. And he might, like you said, he may have the opportunity to get it next year with the increased role. You know, he may end up being the third option, second option in terms of the scoring load, depending on what we see from Murray with this injury when he returns. But I think, you know, if Murray's going to be out, you know, next season because of this ACL injury, we're going to see a huge step up.
100%.
I believe so.
So future is bright there, especially with Jokic and Aaron Gordon now. If you have MPJ really improving and scoring 20 points a game and 20 plus points, Nuggets are going to be fun. Nuggets are going to be really fun. Defensive player of the year. We both said Anthony Davis.
We did, because he didn't win it last year.
Correct. Yeah, it looks like it's probably going to be Rudy. I don't really know who else people would vote for at this point who could have a legitimate argument at getting more votes than Rudy Gobert.
I'll argue Ben Simmons
because
of what Ben Simmons said. Well, you guys are calling Rudy Gobert the defensive player of the year, and I have 42 against him. So, so if Ben Simmons said he had 42 against the defensive player of the year, and the team with the worst record, the Minnesota Timberwolves, I think swept the Utah Jazz this year, and Karl Anthony Towns, a guy that's always being called soft throughout social media and not a good basketball player, where he goes out and he outduels Rudy Gobert every single time they play against each other. And they got the season sweep, the Minnesota Timberwolves, on the Utah Jazz. So I don't really want to hear anything about no defense player of the year coming from no Rudy Gobert. But I digress. Because
he's be a four yeah, he's probably going to win. And his pick and roll statistics as a defender are incredible. I think it's the best in the league. I think teams score like 0.85 points per possession when he's a defender in the pick and roll. Like it's pretty impressive, the numbers that he puts up. And Ben Simmons, it's hard to argue that he's a great he's hard to argue against him being a good defender, because we all know his credentials. We all know his length and his ability to stay in front of his defender. So it could be neck and neck for those two, but just the way that Rudy Gobert has played this season and the defense from the Jazz as a whole and how good they are defensively, and how much of a staple he is to that defense down low, it's going to be going to him, and people are going to be voting for him because of that. And maybe Ben Simmons gets shafted, but if I were voting, I would still probably vote Rudy. And our pick was Anthony Davis, and that's just not going to happen.
Coach of the year, I would say, would be Monty Williams. Would you agree with Monty Williams being coach of the year?
Yeah, I would give it to probably Monty Williams. The things that he has done with the Sun, I would be fine with Quinn Snyder too, the Jazz head coach, because of what he has been able to do, completely transform the offensive production of that team and completely transform the way they approach offense. I mean, this is a team that has just been transformed offensively to shooting three-pointers just consistently. They shoot and make three-pointers at a ridiculous clip, something we have pretty much never seen even from the Warriors. So they completely transform the way they play offense, and that is a huge testament to Quinn Snyder just reading his team and knowing what their strengths are. But then you look at Monty Williams for the Suns, no one expected them to be the 2 seed and have one of the best records in the NBA. So you can make the case for both.
Yeah, you can definitely make the case for both. I would lean more towards Monty Williams because of the simple fact that the Phoenix Suns weren't in the postseason last season, and the amount of turnaround they've pulled off in only a year. Well, really the last 2 years, right? Because even the year before last, when they were close to making the postseason, winning eight in a row last year, the season prior to that, they were terrible. The Phoenix Suns were bad.
Yeah.
So they've had a lot of progression over the last 2 seasons for Monty Williams to be in that position to win Coach of the Year, being second in the West.
Don't forget, though, my boy, Tom Thibodeau. He's not going to win, but he's going to get some votes.
I think he will, too. I was thinking about that this morning. Like, you know, you could make an argument for Tom Thibodeau, coach of the year case, too, because the Knicks, like I said, laughing stock of the league for quite some time now. Now you got to kind of, you know, take the New York Knicks kind of serious a little bit.
Yeah, any coach that made the New York Knicks a respectable team after what they were in the mid-2010s, coach of the decade, honestly.
Okay.
Coach of the decade. Skip coach of the year. All right, Zach, for our third segment, we're going to do a combination stat of the week and overreaction. They're both the same player. They both have to do with the same player, and that player is one Russell Westbrook and what he has been doing triple doubles wise. He passes Oscar Robertson for the most triple doubles in a career. It's just impressive. It's amazing what Russell Wilson has been able to do, especially assist wise. So the stat of the week is 181?
182. It was going to be 181, but then he broke it. So now it's 182. And he'll probably end the season with like 184 before it's all said and done. Man, shout out to Russell Westbrook, man. We got to give him his flowers while he's here, because it's not easy to go out for a triple double. Like, regardless of what you say, the pace and space of today's game and how fast it is now, and there's not too many bigs on the floor as much. There are certain things in basketball that requires just flat out effort and relying on another person. I'll give you an example. I need a LaMelo Ball to have 6 assists in his last game. He had only 5. And let me tell you something, Ben. I watched LaMelo Ball drop a nice dime off to Cody Zeller. Cody Zeller botched the layup. Okay, so you need other people to have accountability for those stats to even matter. If Russell Westbrook is going out all night dishing these passes off and guys aren't making baskets, there is no assist. Or if he's dumping off these passes and guys just going to their bag and get the dribble, it's no longer an assist. And so, and in the rebound thing, this is, oh my goodness, as a 7-footer on the opposing team, I feel disrespected. There's no way a 6'3" guard should have more rebounds than me at the end of the game. Period. I've seen a Milwaukee game in the West versus the Wizards. Giannis got out rebounded and Lopez got out rebounded by Russell Westbrook. That's a problem for me. So I got to shout out Russell Westbrook for that hard work he goes out there and do night in, night out, and fills up the stat sheet and puts his team in position to win the game.
It's really interesting because when people describe Russell Westbrook and they talk about him as a player, passing and his passing ability is usually not one of the main things people bring up. And I find it really interesting because you look at someone like Steve Nash, right? And Steve Nash is known as someone who is the passer. He is the guy. He is the guy everyone grew up watching highlights of crazy passes, and a guy who is known as having eyes in the back of his head. He led the NBA in assists 5 times in his career. If you were to guess how many times Russell Westbrook, including this year, which he will finish leading the league in assists, I'm sure people would not get the correct answer. And he's led the league, including this year, 3 times in assists. Only two fewer than Steve Nash. And Russ is still going to play for a good amount of time longer than this. So theoretically, he could get to 4 or 5 years where he has led the NBA in assists. And I find that really fascinating because if he has the same type of stats as someone like a Steve Nash, I mean, Steve Nash had 6 years where he was in double-digit assists for the season. And I think Russell Westbrook has about 5. Where he's, including this season, he's in double-digit assists. So I think we need to take a collective look at Russell Westbrook as more of that passer, incredible facilitator type guy, rather than the guy who's the heads-down scorer, the guy who plays angry a lot of the time, because he is that. But people really have been overlooking his playmaking, and the numbers back that up.
The numbers so back it up, right? And I think that's what makes a point guard a complete point guard, which leads into the next topic of overreaction. And that's Scott Brooks saying he would go down as the second best point guard of all time, Russell Westbrook. You can make a case for that. Yes, you can honestly make a case for that. Because if a point guard 6'3" is going to go out and average a triple-double for 4 seasons throughout his career, we're just talking about a position. We're not talking about, okay, what did this point guard do to win a championship? We're talking about a point guard that just goes out and competes night in, night out, put his team in position to win games. Just a point guard. We're not talking about the other 4 positions on the floor because it takes 4 guys to win a championship. The Stephen Curry conversation always comes up being, as of late, because of the idea that he can shoot so well, right? Best shooter we've ever seen. But my question is, why can't Steph Curry just be the best shooter we've ever seen from the point guard position as opposed to being considered the best point guard ever, right? I think Westbrook can overtake that as it relates to being the best point guard. I think Westbrook kind of has that edge, if you ask me. And Chris Paul.
That's definitely, I mean, Chris Paul would have to be on that list. And I think the point guard is the more difficult position than I think pretty much any other position to determine who is the best, because you have the pass first type of point guards and you have the score first type of point guards. And like someone like a Derrick Rose, the way he was playing before his injury, you could say like someone like that, who's just a pure scorer, a guy who could score wherever, whenever on the court. Does that make him a better point guard than a Chris Paul? You know, you could have that argument, but it's hard because the parameters are different with each player. I mean, Russell Westbrook has put himself in that conversation because of his statistics and because he's passing and because he can score and because he can rebound. I mean, someone like that, you have to put on a list of best point guards ever. You have to. I don't know why you couldn't. And I know he doesn't have the accolades. He doesn't have the ranks.
Right.
But the statistics are there, and the way he performs during the regular season, it's all there.
And you just got to look at the full body frame of work. And it's just so hilarious that you mentioned accolades, because if you mention accolades when we're talking Steph Curry in regards to being the best point guard ever, we better start talking about Klay Thompson. Now, I know he's not in the season right now due to injury, but you got to give Klay Thompson his flowers right away if we're going to talk about championships, because I don't believe they win those championships without Klay Thompson. I think Klay Thompson's shooting ability is just as important as Steph Curry's was. Now, if you want to talk about best shooter, because, you know, Steph shoots off the dribble, or, you know, he shoots from half court off, splitting the double team, and, you know, Klay Thompson's more of a screen, you know, screen guy, one or two dribbles and then firing it up. Depending on what type of shooter you want, then yeah, sure, you can go with Steph, but, you know, I think arguably those two are the best shooters in NBA history, and I think Steph is the best shooter in NBA history at the point guard position, like, ever. Like, he just so happens to play a PG.
Right. And that's the thing, too. And we could have an argument about this every day for the rest of our lives about, well, is Steph Curry the best shooter and the best scorer at point guard? Or could you say Russell Westbrook is a better scorer than Steph Curry? And I'm not saying he is or isn't. I'm just saying these are the type of arguments that you could have about these guys. Does Steph Curry being the greatest shooter of all time automatically make him the best scoring point guard of all time? And do you, like, make a difference between those two things, things like that? But does Russell Westbrook make all first team NBA this year? Do you think that's something that he can do over Steph Curry, over Luka, over Dame, even over Chris Paul? Do you think Russ gets first or even second team all NBA?
There's 15 positions, correct? So you got an opportunity to even make third. I think he can make second or third, not first.
Basically, is he a top five point guard this year in the NBA? Top six?
Absolutely. I would attest to that. Yes.
And the triple double thing, I think, is going to help him a lot when people are voting or something like this. So it'll be interesting to see. But he's won an MVP. He's beaten an Oscar Robertson record that no one thought was ever going to be beaten, at least not this quickly.
First ballot.
And yeah, he could definitely, I mean, he's going to end up in the Hall of Fame, but talking about best point guards ever, he's got to be in that conversation for sure, just because of the numbers that he puts up. What NBA Twitter is talking about this week?
What it do, baby?
Exactly. Your man's out here punching people.
I'm sure he has a good reason to. I'm sure, listen, if Luka is punching people, they probably deserve it.
So Luka punched Colin Sexton in, like, the groin area and was ejected from a game last week.
Okay,
and,
maybe.
Yeah. So I don't think, you know, that it was warranted, to say the least. But he said, you know, Luka's defense was, it's more common than you think. Now, I don't really see it too much often in the amount of games that I watch, but apparently those type of physical, those physical interactions take place throughout the game more often than not, if you ask Luka.
Apparently. Yeah, I love Luka, but the man does love to do weird stuff when he's on the court. And he's not a dirty player, really. He's not known as a dirty player yet. And that was definitely kind of a dirty play there. But he is known for complaining a lot. And I will say that. And he does that often.
And this is something we got to pay attention to. He may get suspended soon.
Yeah,
because of these technical fouls. I believe he has around 15, 16, and that's around close to where you get the one game suspension. So that's something to keep an eye on, too, as we get closer to this postseason. Because I felt like last year in the postseason, he almost missed a game because of that very reason. You know, too many technical fouls during the regular season, and it almost cost him a game. So that's something to be careful for if you're a Dallas Mavericks fan.
100%, and he definitely needs to be careful. And I know the NBA said with the play-in game, any technical foul does not count towards the total. So if that is something that does end up happening with Luka, I don't think it will, since they are in fifth place right now in the West. But if they do end up playing in that playing game, if he does get a technical, it won't count towards that number. So that's, you know, good for him, I guess. But he does need to tread. He needs to tread carefully. He doesn't want to be missing these games in the playoffs because of a stupid technical that he gets. Other stuff on NBA Twitter. This is an interesting question, I thought, that you brought up, because we saw DK Metcalf run track, and he ran, we finished in 10th place, but it was still fast. 10th place,
but it was super fast.
Yeah, that guy's fast. So who's the NBA's DK Metcalf is the question that you asked. That's tough. That is really, really tough. John Wall is a name that comes up, because that guy is unbelievably quick. When he is fully healthy, I mean, he is one of the faster players in the league for sure.
I'll probably say De'Aaron Fox is pretty darn fast. He's He's pretty fast with the ball. You know who I'll give it to? Like in his heyday, his prime, that could probably go out there and maybe run that 100 meters. Derrick Rose in his prime, man.
I was thinking the same thing.
In his prime, flying up the floor. Remember they used to do the skill challenge a little differently than what they do now, and how Rose won it and how fast he had won that event over the weekend at All-Star. Oh my goodness, I couldn't believe how fast he was. And like, he's a guy I think of, obviously Westbrook, but the young guy Fox, De'Aaron Fox, he's super fast.
Yeah, he's really fast. The 22-year-old pre-injury Derrick Rose, I think I would put up there as well. He was quick. That guy could move. We got scoring title beef being talked about on Twitter. Steph Curry being petty.
I told you that night before the game, he checked the stats. I knew he did. And then he confirmed it for me. So that's all I had needed right there. That's all I needed. He checked the box score for the Wizards game. He saw that Bradley Beal had 50. He goes out there and scores 49 in 29 minutes. 49 points, 29 minutes. Then Kent Bazemore got involved. You thought what Kent Bazemore had to say? He tripping.
explain what happened, because it's fun, because Steph Curry right now leads the NBA in points per game, but it's only like 0.3 or 0.4 more points than Bradley Beal right now. Yep. And Kent Bazemore, Steph's teammate, talked about how players are tearing their hamstrings now trying to catch up to him, and specifically talking about Bradley Beal, who hurt his hamstring. That is ruthless.
That's ruthless. Definitely throwing some shade. Kent Bazemore said that Bradley Beal couldn't take a joke because Bradley Beal got right on. Like, listen, I do this. I ain't new to this. I'm true to this. Don't get disrespectful as it relates to my hamstring injury, because I've been a player that's been battled with injuries early on in my career. And so I want to appreciate you coming at me like that, talking about no injury. Listen, I'm dropping this 50 ball with no problem. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, my hamstring might have went out a little bit, but that's fine. We bounce right back. You know, so Kent Bazemore got to learn his place in this scoring. Maybe if he could average 20 points a game or something that, then he might have something to say in all of this. But yeah, it's neck and neck for sure. 31.9 and 31.4. Yeah. So it's inches away between the two.
Yeah, 0.5 points separates the two with, you know, three or four games remaining. So actually, that race is going to be a lot of fun to see who's going to win the scoring title this year between Steph and Bradley. And listen, if we don't have a betting corner this week, but maybe the player prop overs on both their points for the rest of the season. If they're really into this right now, it seems like they are. They're going to be going for 50 every single night for the next couple of games for something like that. Spicy P on Twitter, he bought his mom a new house for Mother's Day. Yeah. I did see that. That's crazy.
Yeah, I was happy to see that. You know, it's always good because that's what it's all about, right? You know what I'm saying? These players, the first thing they do when they get drafted is one of the one things they want to do is give back to the person who helped raise them to be in that position that they're in. You know, we saw Bam Adebayo buy his mom a house recently around Christmas time. And now here for Mother's Day, we're seeing Spicy P, Pascal Siakam go out his way and buy his mom and his family a home, you know, just giving back to their family for all they've done to get them in that position. So, yeah, I had to shout out my boy Spicy P for the Toronto Raptors, man. Good job. Good job, Spicy P.
That was very cool to see. I think it's always cool to see the athletes, you know, pay it back, so to speak, to their parents, getting them houses, getting them cars, helping them retire early, things like that. I think that's really cool to see on Twitter. And finally, I don't know, maybe tough this was news. Just me. Yeah, tough news. It seemed like it was just me because this kind of went under the radar with Jaylen Brown being out for the year now for the Boston Celtics.
That's huge.
That's a big loss. Yeah.
That's a big loss. Like,
obviously, they've been struggling this year, the Celtics, but they have played better as of late, and they are most likely going to be in the play-in game as the seventh seed, unless something changes with the Heat and the Heat start losing and the Celtics get into that sixth spot.
Well, they actually play each other soon.
They do. Yeah, they play tonight as of this recording, Monday night or Tuesday night. So that's a huge game for the two teams, and Jaylen Brown is going to be out for the rest of the year, and that is a huge loss for the Celtics. I mean, he is someone they relied on a lot, especially for three and to take some pressure off of Jason Tatum and everything like that. That is a really, really big loss for them and for a team that is trying to make a push deeper into the playoffs, in a team too that knows they can at the very least reach the conference finals with the type of roster that they have.
Hey, what if the Celtics needed to start just a whole rebuild and just blow it up? I know that's crazy to say, but I just feel like Kemba Walker, right? He left his knees in Charlotte. Like, yeah. I don't think he has that same lift and that same explosion that we used to see when he played for the Hornets. I don't think it's there anymore. And then, like you said, like the wrist injury for Jaylen Brown is such a huge loss for them for this season, because I know like they had a lot of momentum as of late before this injury, you know, trying to get out of that play-in scenario. But I think they're going to end up staying in it. I don't know if they'll be able to beat a Miami Heat team, a team that they're kind of messing with in terms of that six and that seven spot. You know, they're kind of intertwined right there with close to matching records. And so when you have that scenario and Evan Fournier needing to step up, and like I said, Kemba not having no knees right now, yeah, the scoring options are limited outside of Jason Tatum and a streaky Marcus Smart.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see how that game goes. And they're going to end up playing in that 7-8 game for sure. Not for sure, but almost 100%.
More than likely. Sure. Yeah. More than likely.
So they'll still have a chance to make that 7 or 8 spot with the play-in game. But it's going to be an uphill battle for them, for sure. Without Jaylen Brown, they're going to need Jason Tatum to score 40 points every single night if they're going to want to have a chance.
Absolutely. Without question. Definitely going to need Tatum to step up these last few games and into that play-in scenario. Now, buddy, that's going to conclude for us, right? This edition of the Points in the Paint podcast. We appreciate everyone listening. We appreciate everyone checking out the clips that we drop because of the Skype that we do here now. We're dropping the videos for you all. We appreciate you all's feedback from the videos. A lot of people said they like these videos. They like that we're doing this now. So we appreciate the feedback from that. We want you to always subscribe if you listen for the first time to the Points in the Paint podcast presented by Stadium, the number one basketball podcast presented by Stadium. Make sure you follow your main man Zach Badgerhouse and my main man Ben Wittenstein on Twitter. Make sure you follow Points Paint on Facebook and on Twitter. Catch up with Shams for your latest NBA news across the association, and follow Stadium, and make sure you listen to Trash and Treasure with Eddie and Felder, come out every Thursday. That's going to conclude this edition of Points in the Paint.